Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the session. I'm your host, Justin Crosley, back in the studio, all the way from Denver, actually. I just spent the last week in Denver for the Great American Beer Festival, which I'm going to talk about here in a minute. But I got a fun show for you today. Hailing all the way from Canada, Blind Enthusiasm Brewing Company is here. We're going to meet Greg and talk about what's happening there. First, thanks to our sponsor, More Beer. They bring you this show and every show that we do. You can go to morebeer.com and check them out. Thank them so much from the bottom of your heart and mine. And check them out on YouTube. Go to the YouTube channel. That's where they give away a bunch of cool stuff and show you how to use cool stuff. The Brewing Network loves More Beer. I promise you, they're good people. All right. Let's get right to it, shall we, Greg? I've got Greg from Blind Enthusiasm. Greg, I didn't even bother asking you how to pronounce your last name because I knew I'd forget it by the
Take a shot.
Zeschuk.
Yeah, or Zeschuk. Zeschuk is probably the correct spelling, like, originally, but as we call Louise, Zeschuk, nice and phonetic, super easy.
So Zeschuk.
Yeah, it's good.
What's your background?
It's mainly Ukrainian and a bit of Polish, and you know, that's from that part of the, I mean, I'm third generation, so it's a long time ago.
Got it. Yeah, Zeschuk is way easier, isn't it?
It is. So. not fancy.
It's so funny, like, as soon as I pick a name phonetically, it's always the opposite, right? Yeah. It's always like, no, it was Zeschuk. Fuck.
No, that's probably the right way to say it.
Excellent. Well, welcome to the show. Blind Enthusiasm's from Edmonton, Canada.
Yeah, exactly.
Edmonton, Alberta. There's the province.
Straight north of Montana. So if you go straight north of the middle of Montana, we're up there. We're about 300 miles from the border. We're north of Calgary. Calgary's okay. Just between us and the border.
Okay.
Yeah, we've been running about 7 years up there.
Here's the start of my stupid questions for the day. Yeah. So it's the most freezing place on earth, right? Or close to it. Like, so I love Montana, but I've only been in the summer. And everyone from Montana, they don't want Californians there anyway. But they also said to me, before you decide you love Montana, spend a winter here because they're brutal, right? But you're saying you're north of that.
Yeah, they're mild in Montana.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it gets cold. I mean, it's interesting because once you adapt to it, it's not bad because you can always dress. But I mean, coldest it gets is around minus 40. That's where Fahrenheit and Celsius kind of like cross. It's very commonly in the 30s, minus 30s or minus 20s. But that's just like a week or two.
So you have to like plug in your engine at night, right?
Yeah, if you're outside, you have a we have block heaters in our cars that actually run a little heater in the car overnight so they don't freeze solid, which they will if you don't.
Right. And that's starting soon, I assume. Is it cooling off now? Or?
Oh, yeah. It's starting to get cool. I think next week. And you know, it's funny because it warms my heart as a spontaneous brewer. Next week is next week's spontaneous season. As soon as we get to hovering around freezing above and below, that's when we start brewing spontaneous. So it's just starting to get to freezing at night this coming week.
Okay, we're going to talk more about that. Hold that thought, because that sounds opposite to me. That sounds curious to me. So now I'm going to have to find out about that. All right, a couple other things I got to take care of. Make sure you support all of our sponsors, including Williams Brewing. Go to williamsbrewing.com. They've been with me since the beginning, too. Just great people and a great shop there. Go to williamsbrewing.com. Don't forget about the 21st Amendment. And don't forget about Beersmith, the Beersmith Brewing Software, which I'll tell you about later in the show, too. And you can always support the show yourselves by doing your Amazon shopping. Just click the Amazon links on our homepage. We used to have an Amazon Canada link, too. But you Canadians didn't buy enough for me, so they canceled me.
I tried.
But those of you in the U.S., and I believe still the U.K., can support us by just, you know, buy all your normal Amazon stuff. Just start with the link on our homepage, and it helps us a ton. That's a great way to support us, and then, of course, by supporting our sponsors. Okay, and then before we dive a little more into Blind Enthusiasm, I wanted to talk a little about the Great American Beer Festival, if you don't mind. Even though I guess Canadians aren't allowed to enter.
We are not.
No, but do you enter the World Beer Cup?
We do. I did once. I did 2 years ago. We actually, one of our beers did, you know, they tell you kind of how you did. One got really close and that was kind of sad. I think it was in the last round. And then we didn't last year, but we're going to be doing it this year. So,
excellent.
Yeah.
Well, I believe, and rightly so, I get more viewers for our World Beer Cup broadcast than I do our Great American Beer Festival. And you know where the World Beer Cup is, and the conference is taking place next year, don't you?
No, I don't, can't remember.
Las Vegas, man.
So that just sounds dangerous.
Get your liver ready now for that.
Yeah.
But anyhow, this year's Great American Beer Festival, I had a good time. It went great. The awards went great. The hall was massive, and then I think slightly less people, so you could really get around. It's a good time to think about going to JBF next year, because I think they've got it pretty dialed in. It was comfortable. It was fun. The beers were great. But I wanted to give a few shout-outs. I love streaming the awards. So I've been streaming the awards in some capacity for 17 years. We started out just doing streaming audio because back then you couldn't even do streaming video. Maybe if you were like CBS or something, you need like massive trucks worth of equipment. But I've been streaming the audio since way back when. And of all the things I do at the Brewing Network, the award ceremony streaming, I think, are my favorite. It's never gotten old for me. Like, I love seeing you guys up on stage winning. It just means so much, right? And my listeners have heard me say this before. So this year was no different. I just wanted to give a shout out to a couple of the winners. Like, one of the breweries of the year are a couple of my best friends, Brendan and Celeste, from Liquid Gravity Brewing Company. They opened in 2019, and they just won Brewery of the Year. And I think that's in, like, the 2,000-barrel size, so I think it's like mid-size. I don't know what they call them anymore. But what you know, they won three medals and then points on other things. Like, you name it, they just killed it. So I just want to give a shout out to them. I want to give a shout out to a new brewery, but not new brewers, and that's Shred. So Shred Beer Company's been open for like less than 6 months. Brewery of the Year, but listen to the size. So you can imagine, since they just opened, it's a fairly small size. It's listed on the metal as 0 to 200 barrels. Shouldn't they just say like 200 barrels? Because was anybody going to win with 0 barrels? It's just a weird description. But Zach came from, well, he's come from a few places, but his most recent brewery up here was Slice. He left there, opened Shred, and just they immediately kill it. And it was just so cool to see. And by the way, it's not just Zach. It's an amazing team of Zach Frasher and Amy Heller. And Amy, just a solid, amazing brewer, just like Zach. So I just wanted to give a special shout out to those folks for doing it. And then, you know, a brewery that I've never even heard of, and I don't know, I just saw them win so many medals. I got to give them a call and see if they'll do the show. But Third Eye Brewing Company out of Sharonville, Ohio. Never been, never heard of it, don't know the brewery. But as I'm back there doing, you know, streaming the awards, I just name called. They just kept winning. And I always like to see that. You don't have to be my friend for me to be stoked for you. So I was really happy for them. Third Eye Brewing Company, just a shout out from way out here in California. Love to have you on the show. So if you hear this, reach out to me. Otherwise, you're going to be hearing from me soon. And that's about it. Just a fun time. I work the whole time. There's all sorts of events around the GABF. So if you ever get to go, you should go and do all that other stuff. I stay in the hall doing my thing, but it's a great time. And I want to thank the Brewers Association for hosting me, putting it on, and letting me be their official webcast after all these years. I've screwed it up a couple times, and they still let me do it. I haven't screwed it up in a while, so maybe that's
why. They have confidence.
Yeah, exactly. Well, why don't we start by pouring a little bit of our first beer?
Yep.
And while you're doing that, if you can pop and talk, I don't know.
Yeah, I can. I got skills.
Why don't we talk a little history of Blind Enthusiasm and your history, of course, first. And you're the owner.
I'm the owner, yeah. I come here by way of a very strange track.
Okay.
I am trained initially as a medical doctor. Then I started a video game company called BioWare that made games like Baldur's Gate, Neverwinter Nights, Mass Effect, Dragon Age, Star Wars, Knights of the Old Republic, Star Wars, The Old Republic. So I worked for about 20 years in video games.
Okay.
Then we sold our company to Electronic Arts.
Wow.
And I started a beer show called The Beer Diaries down in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
Got to know a lot of the guys down there. And then,
so you were into beer that whole time, obviously.
You know, interestingly, I was really into beer when I was young. And then I was kind of always, I remember, like, I lived in Ohio for a year, so I found, like, this was in the early 90s, I found Pete's Wicked Ale. I'm like, oh, I got to get this Pete's Wicked Ale. And
nice,
then
yeah.
Finally, when I was in Austin, that's when I got really back into it. And I had a friend come over from San Francisco, and he said, hey, let's go to the Ginger Man. They got some amazing beers there.
Great place.
Yeah, and yeah. I just got into it. And the coolest thing was I was there with a number of people that were traveling as well. Like, I would travel back and forth from Canada. And the guys, I got to meet the guys at Jester King when they got started, like Jeff and Ron. And,
yeah.
And as they got started, it was like cool because I could go hang out at their place on the weekends that wasn't working and just kind of see what they did. And that was probably the biggest inspiration for us doing, you know, spontaneous mixed ferments. Like, and it kind of went from there where I kind of got into it. So what we actually happened to be drinking a spontaneous beer right now.
Excellent.
Our first launch was Spontaneous Manifesto, first spontaneous launch. And this is a little, I mean, it's been through a plane, it's been through a rolly bag, and so it's usually, there's a little bit of sediment, so it's kicked up a bit, but
sure.
It'll still be pretty delicate.
Okay.
So this beer is a blend of 1, 2, and 3-year-old, equal parts of like spontaneous beer. We've been doing spontaneous about 6 years, and this is like the best of the best of what we've had so far.
You're careful not to call it lambic.
Correct.
Or 3 years of lambic.
Correct.
It's just spontaneous. Because that has to be from Belgium, right?
You know, it doesn't... You could, in theory, but our friends in Belgium would beat us up.
Okay, right. They just don't love it. Yeah.
Well, no, I think out of... And we, out of respect, don't use those terms. Like, we don't use creek. We don't use lambic. And I understand how some people feel they may want to say something style, but, you know, we know those guys. Like, Doug, my head brewer, worked at Cantillon.
Nice.
We know Jean. We know a whole bunch of the guys in Belgium. And so it's kind of like... You know, out of respect, we don't use it. We got to make our own way.
Sure.
You know, so
that makes sense.
Yeah. So this delicate, interesting, like a lot of very fruit forward, like a lot of stone fruit. You know?
Oh yeah. Kind of a sharp, tart acidity. I don't mean over acidic. It's not like, it's not Rodenbach here.
Yeah.
But just a nice sharp tartness there. It's super clean. But yeah, stone fruit peach. Up front.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of peach.
Cherry as well, right? Like, there's some cherry mixed in.
Yeah. Almost like the, like, and maybe that's the sharp tart I'm getting, like a cherry skin.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's a little bit, and so because it's spontaneous, it's got 3-year-old, there is a little bit of the leather and the it's a tobacco, and that'll kind of come forward more with time. Like, these will age 10, 15 years. We cap and cork.
Hmm.
These are made to be aging beers, collecting beers. And
wow.
You can drink them today. I mean, like, when I tell, like, consumers that don't know this kind of beer, I say, hey, it's kind of like almost like a natural wine or champagne or beer, somewhere in the mix of all those things, and they're usually blown away because they've never seen this flavor profile before.
For sure. Let me ask you about aging real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
So you said you listened to Sour Hour, right?
I did, yeah.
I didn't listen to a lot of it, but I was in the studio once listening to Jay answer a question about aging, and it kind of surprised me coming from Jay and the Rare Barrel. And the question was, of course, how long should we age our beers and this and that? And I've always heard varying degrees of answers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it depends on how you store it, et cetera, et cetera. But he had a pretty upfront answer before all of those, and that was the beer's never going to be as good as when it leaves the brewery. Everything after that is different. Not He didn't say bad. He didn't say whatever. But he said, if you're asking me when the peak of the beer is, it's when I let it leave the brewery, and it'll never be better than that. What do you think about that?
I don't think that's true.
Yeah. I thought you might not. Yeah. And well, I've never heard another brewer say it either.
It depends, right? Like, I think what I would say, you know, what's interesting, he has a very important point that he's making there, is that, like, you know, we condition this beer for 10 months. Like, it actually will usually have gotten sick in the process.
Sure.
Like, yeah.
Explain that for anyone who doesn't know.
Yeah, so Pediococcus will exude glycopolysaccharides. It's sort of like almost like a food source, and the beer will get a thickness to it. Almost
kind of
like
slimy.
Slimy. We hate to use the word snotty. You'll often see guys like putting public service warnings that haven't aged, like held their beers long enough, that because about 3-4 months in, that's what happens. You have to wait till that happens, and it resorbs. It's part of the natural process for Pediococcus. And it resorbs that glycopolysaccharide, and it goes back into the cells, and it cleans right up. It actually gets almost a little lemony note to it. So what Jay's saying is true, is that we don't let any beer go until we think it's as good as it can be right now.
Okay,
you know,
yeah.
It's 10. We usually do 10 months of bottle conditioning.
And then, of course, you crack some open and make sure everything's good, I assume.
Oh yeah, we crack continually. Yeah. So starting about 6 months, we start checking it.
Yeah,
Make sure carbonation's there, but then. You know, they're super cool. Like, you know, a good example, we had one, it was a French dry hop, Barbrouge, Mistral. And it was like, after a four year old bottle, is phenomenal. It's better than when we opened it. Like,
wow.
I mean, and we've had, you know, if you wait 25 years, it'll be very different. Like, mostly, like, what'll happen typically in a beer like this, the Spontaneous Manifesto, the fruitiness will drop a bit, the savory elements will come forward a little bit. And it just won't have the same fruit forwardness, but it comes down to structure. You know, like, it's very much like aging a wine. There's a structure, the acidity, the alcohol, those things work together to support it. But so it will get better with time in a lot of cases. Sometimes there's a point where it isn't, but then that could be, like, we don't know yet, but we're at least 5 years in on these beers, and some of them are still absolutely phenomenal.
Still getting better.
They're phenomenal. Yeah, like, it's crazy.
No Brettanomyces in this beer?
Oh, yeah, there's Brett.
There is? Yeah.
As a spontaneous beer, we've actually been doing a pretty gigantic research study. So we actually are doing a very large research study with our local university. So we know there's only like huge number of microorganisms in this. There's multiple strains of Brett.
Okay.
We're in a couple of years, we'll start releasing papers based on our research. We have my head brewer, you know, we have a guy that's got a PhD in fermentation science. That's our research assistant. He's through the university, but he works with us researching this stuff. So there's Brett, there's so much stuff in here, and the spontaneous, it's crazy. Our mixed ferment, there's Brett as well. We pitch Brett.
Okay.
But we pitch about 5 or 6 microorganisms, but the spontaneous has, like, the kitchen sink. It's just unbelievable how much stuff is in there.
And is it spontaneous in the sense of, like, a cool ship and a bunch of open windows?
Yeah.
Oh, it is, right.
Oh, it's for reals.
Did you inoculate anything in this particular one?
No.
So 100%. 100%.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we do...
It's so clean for that.
Well, yeah, we've refined our process. We have a true turbine mashing system. So, like I said, Doug worked at Cantillon. He got permission from Jean. He got permission from the guys from Dre to measure their systems. We recreated a turbine mashing system up in Canada using the guys from Specific Mechanicals. We only turbine mash our building. We don't do any normal mash.
Wow.
So that's, like, you know, the huge, the multi-step liquid decoctions, the 3.5-hour boils. And then at this point, about half goes into the cooler ship and half goes into a vessel where we will, but not blended. Like, we actually do, this is one of the crazy things we do. So we do pure spontaneous beers, we do pure mixed beers, and we have been mixing spontaneous and...
inoculated.
Spontaneous, right. Adding mixed and spontaneous together. So it's actually super cool because they're extra fruity.
Right.
And so... We're doing a lot of neat stuff, but it all comes from the exact same wort. It's always the same.
Okay.
But it's true spontaneous with cool ship and everything.
It's delicious.
Thank you.
That surprises me. I never would have guessed. I wouldn't have been upset by calling it a spontaneously fermented beer, but I thought, no, this is pitched. This is inoculated.
We've got like 5 or 6 more coming this year. We're doing a lot of beers. Like we have over 500 puncheons in our building.
Okay.
Like we do 100,000 bottles, but 50,000 of them will be spontaneous. This is like a reveal in a sense. Like, we're going hard into this in a big way because that's what we're passionate about.
Sure. Okay. So let's go back to how you started. You get turned on by these beers after, you know, through friends and the Ginger Man, but how do you end up getting into a brewery?
So when I was working at BioWare, like I said, I kind of knew I was going to retire. I kind of said, you know, like, I'm done. I've been working about 20 years. We'd sold the company to Electronic Arts, so I was very fortunate on the financial side.
Great.
That makes it easier to run a brewery, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, at least something to a hole that for you to dump your money into.
Yeah, which is spontaneous beer.
Yeah, exactly.
But I kind of got this inkling that I wanted to, like, after, it's kind of after interviewing Jeff from Jester King, I'm like, man, you know what? I want to do a beer show. I want to interview brewers. And so I did this show called The Beer Diaries.
Okay,
and
yeah.
They're still on the internet. They're still on YouTube. And I did this show where I would go and do these long form interviews at their breweries, discuss with them like the beers. And it'd be usually cut down to about a 30-minute interview, way ahead of its time. This was like, started, the first ones are probably 2010, 2011 maybe. And I did that for a couple of years. I did one season in Austin. I did one season in Colorado.
Okay.
All around Colorado. And then...
So just traveling around recording, yeah. Little recording kit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, me, I had two or three people with me and a sound
nice.
Guy. And then my wife was like, you quit games because you travel too much. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Right. But I didn't like that travel.
Well, you know, and it was funny. And it was a really funny time. And it was when I was interviewing Funkworks in, I think it's Longmont.
Fort Collins.
Oh, Fort Collins.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
yeah.
right. Fort Collins. Funkworks. Brad and Gordon. They're the two owners.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
chatting with them and like... I think Brad was an accountant. Gordon was an engineer that made bike frames.
Okay,
and
he was also
like a national champion saison brewer. So there's a
yes,
like,
yeah.
on home brew. So he knew what he was doing. But I was like, had this moment. Goes, you know, I could do this too. Not just because, like, I don't think I could do what they could have done technically. But I just like, you know what? I think just people can do this. You can. And so I came home to Edmonton. And before I started the brewery, I kind of became the exec director of the Brewers Association there and kind of ran that
a bit. But you were at no point so far. A brewer yourself, not brewer, nothing.
And I'm still not a brewer.
Wow, amazing.
I do a lot of emails.
Okay, yeah. Well, most brewers and most owners end up doing that too.
Yeah.
But this, I love hearing this, Ed, because, well, go on. I just love hearing it because you're right. Anyone can do it if you have the right mindset.
Yeah.
But you speak like a brewer, so I'm just surprised to hear you're not.
I spend a lot of time. I have brewing diplomas. I'm very academic. I've done diplomas and I've done lots of courses in it. And I've read lots of books, but I'm not, and I'm around it all day, every day.
Got it. Because I'll be honest, sometimes when I'm reading a bio and it's an owner of a brewery and nowhere in there does it say brewer, I get worried about the interview, right?
That's fair.
It's going to be a sales interview. Like, those are never fun. You know, as a beer radio host, you know that a sales interview is never fun.
There's like, when they would give me the sales guy instead of like one of the, I'd be
I'll make it work.
Yeah. And so for me, like, I just had a real passion for it. And I like, you know, I'm a BJCP judge and all that stuff. Like, I've done a lot of stuff to kind of get there, and then I started it. And then for me, the key thing was hiring some really strong brewers. Like, my brewery, I have two breweries. I have a clean brewery, we call The Market.
Okay.
Does ales and lagers. Lagers all the way from 7 years ago, so we're ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
A guy named Rob Monk runs that. Rob was the head brewer at Yukon, brewing up way up in the Yukon, and head brewer at Spinnaker's. He'd been in the brewery industry 17 years when I hired him, so he's a super veteran. Whereas Doug Chechnita, the head brewer at The Monolith that does the spontaneous and mixed ferment beers, he'd worked, he's from Edmonton. I met him through this brewing consultant that said Doug was working in Quebec at this brewery called Trou de Diable. And he said, oh, you got to meet Doug. He wants to do what you're doing. And so, and then Doug, I got to know him. I said, hey, let's work together. Then he went off to work at Cantillon for a year. So I visited him at Cantillon. And going to Cantillon blew my mind. Like, I'd spent a lot of time, like I said, in Austin at Jester King. I'd been to Fort Collins and saw New Belgium and all the stuff they did. But then it was going
great
to
sour program there too.
Great.
Yeah.
No, great. But then going to Brussels, your head just goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I had a chance to, you know, spend a lot of time at Cantillon and Dre Fontaine and just kind of learned a lot more about like what I wanted to do. And then we kind of came back and built some buildings and filled them with barrels and have been tinkering away in the solitude.
You started with the clean brewery?
Yes, exactly.
Just that and then built
a second brewery. There's two sites.
Two different sites.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you didn't want to do it all in the same building?
And there's not a space. So it was interesting because when I was doing the beer diaries, like I kind of knew the second part of the beer diaries, the last little bit, I knew I was going to leave. And I started like exploring breweries that I wanted to kind of almost recreate.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple in Denver that were in neighborhoods. And so they're like in these little neighborhoods. I'm like, it'd be so cool to have a name. Because back in my home in Edmonton, they were all industrial. You were not allowed to put a brewery in anything but an industrial, like a medium industrial space. Like, it was crazy. So no one had tap rooms. Like, there were no tap rooms back when I was... This was in, we're talking the 20,
2012s, 2013s. Like, okay, there's no tap rooms. And so I came back, so I'm going to make a neighborhood place. And then turns out, like, the city guys said, no, you can't do that. You can't put it there. But you can make a restaurant that happens to have a brewery.
Ah.
So I made a restaurant called Bira, which is, like, it's funny. It's now been on Canada's top 100 best restaurants list.
Amazing.
So it's like a finer dining beer restaurant, right?
Okay, yeah.
It's really funny because it was accidental. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that was just going to kind of make fun of you for that. Like, oh, they tell me how to do a restaurant, so whatever. I opened a fine dining restaurant. So it's not like it happened without thought.
No, but so the key thing with all these things is my approach to all this stuff is I don't do it myself. I find someone who can do it. And okay, then I give them all the tools and I help them. So I had this chef, Christine Sanford, and Christine was super talented. Everyone said, got to hire Christine. And she created the menu and the restaurant. Like, so she, now my job is to make her successful. It's the same thing in video games. Because me and my business partner made the first few games. Eventually we were just helping other people make games. Like, okay, we're kind of the editors and the mentors. And so
facilitate talented people.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. it's like the easiest thing you can do is find super talented people, help them be successful, and then I'm super lazy, so I can sit back and let them do all the awesome work.
Absolutely.
And I just write the emails. I just write emails.
you're my idol right now.
No, and then the thing is, that's how a good way to work is.
Yeah,
you know? And
you're right.
And it's hard to do, but and so that's kind of like how it all happened. And then we opened the clean brewery restaurant that would have been like 7 years ago. And then 6 years ago, the Monolith opened. And so for four years, we had no tap room or anything at the Monolith because it took years. We were still...
And the Monolith is the spontaneous brewery.
Yeah, spontaneous mix.
Yeah, yeah.
No, yeah, sours are... Oh, man, that, we can go into that for hours. Like,
sure.
The, you know, you can call these beers sour in the sense, but it kind of undersells them. Like,
I think you're right.
That's the thing.
I think in the beginning it was helpful... To help introduce, but it did become, there were diminishing returns after a while because people were like, sour. So you're right.
Well, no, that's interesting because you go like, well, what's different between mine and the kettle sour? You know, they're both tart.
Mm-hmm.
They may or may not have fruit. You know, mine takes 4 years to make, theirs takes 4 weeks to make.
Right.
You know? And there's a difference in the tasting, but you got to get the consumer to taste it first, right? Then they'll kind of get it. But if they just like see it on a menu board, they'll like, well, that one's more expensive, and they're both the same thing, so why would I drink it?
Yeah.
You know? And so it's, I find, like, with our beers, like, just like the experience you had, is when you have people try them, they're like, wow, this is remarkable. And like,
sure.
Yeah.
So I'm skipping ahead, but only because I'm making some assumptions here.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like you were most excited, even before you opened the first brewery, about spontaneous beer, but you started with a clean brewery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I wonder if maybe you sort of thought about it like whiskey or something. Like, you're like, well, I need to do something for 4 years until this stuff's ready.
That's true. By the way, I really do like all beer.
Okay, got it.
No, but you're right. Like, I think it's a true thing because, like, yeah, you know, if when you're making whiskey and if you're not making vodka, you're spending a lot of money with no return.
You're not selling a thing for a while, yeah.
And so that's very similar, absolutely.
Okay.
But I think the thing that's a clean brewery, like, we did a lot of fun things. Like, we did a bunch of recipes, ale, then we did them all via lager, then did heads to heads. Like, we do a lot of fun experimental. Like, we literally don't make a normal hazy, even though it's still the most popular thing. We make a,
okay,
we took our wheat beer and, like, added a ton of hops to it. And the wheat beer is called Zesty Z. So we called Haze Z and Hazy. And people are like, well, is it a hazy? It's called Hazy. And it's, so yeah, you can never kick that, like, the little bit of banana
like clove.
No,
yeah.
Little, but then when you add Galaxy and Enigma on top of it in buckets, it's quite different.
Right.
So,
okay.
So we do, like, we kind of do funny things on our, like, our clean brewery is not a regular clean brewery, I would say. We do a lot of, like, nothing's ever on style. It's all kind of on partials and on the edges of style and stuff.
Okay. And it's called Blind Enthusiasm?
Yeah, and we call
they're
that
both.
Yeah, we made our marketing really confusing. It's like Blind Enthusiasm is the parent, and then one's the Market Brewery, and one's the Monolith.
Okay, but those are locations, right?
Yeah, so yeah, they're, yeah. So this kind of makes sense. It's
sure.
It's all just Blind Enthusiasm. Like, and I think the Monolith, we just use that to denote, like, when a consumer picks this up, and again, it's in bottles. That's the other thing. It's like a big bottle. People are like, well, this is going to be different. Right?
Yeah, of course. So. Well, okay, so tell us what this beer is again, but we're going to get us to a break.
Yeah.
So before we do, and you said this one's available now? Or
In Canada.
In Canada, yeah. And that's right. We have a pretty big Canadian listenership.
Yeah, yeah. No, so in Edmonton, we just released it on this past Saturday, 1, 2, 3 year. The tradition of goods is you have a differing amount of each year, but we actually have equal 1, 2, 3 year. Neutral red wine barrels, and then conditioned for 10 months. Just a really light, refreshing, you know, it's got like lots of dimension to it. And it's just, yeah, it's surprisingly clean, but also like got a lot of character for our first spontaneous.
Spontaneous Manifesto, it's called, right?
Exactly.
All right, you can go check it out.
I'll hold it up
and yeah, hold up to the camera right there if you're watching us on YouTube. And then you can also go to blindenthusiasm.ca and you can check out all the beers that they have there, including that one. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more from Blind Enthusiasm. Hang in there.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome back to the session. We are still hanging out with Blind Enthusiasm from Edmonton, Canada, tasting some great beer. Some of the first out of their spontaneous program, I'm learning right now, even though you guys have been a brewery for seven-ish years.
Yeah.
So is this really the first year you've released spontaneous beer?
100% spontaneous is the first one.
Okay, yeah. Got it.
It took, so if you look at it, it took 3 years in barrel, took 10 months of... so it's almost 4 years just to make the beer. And then the first... I'll be honest, the first couple spontaneous batches we did, like we had to dial things, and it didn't always work out great. We learned over a couple seasons on how to dial in our beers, and we're really happy with how they're going now. Like
okay.
The spontaneous stock is like super solid.
And is it going into barrels?
Yeah, so it goes right into barrels. So right out of the cool ship, so cool ship, it goes in. I can talk a little bit about that. Like we do it twice a year. So we brew in the spring and in the fall. We want temperatures around 0 Celsius or 32 Fahrenheit, around freezing.
Yeah.
We want kind of an average of that. And so we'll usually put it in about 4 o'clock at, you know, just under boiling. And it comes out for us at like 18 Celsius, which I'm guessing that's probably 60-ish.
So you're not even running it through a heat exchanger?
No.
Okay.
Because of where we are.
Yeah.
Because of where we are. So we if we wanted to, we could freeze it in the middle of winter, just open those windows at minus 40. But no, so we actually don't run any kind of secondary stuff. We just go right into a cool ship. We open the windows. We actually have a computer program that controls the room.
Okay.
So we have a temperature probe in the beer. We have automated louvers. We have a fan system that pulls air across, and it actually adjusts the speed of the system based on the temperatures of the ambient liquid or the liquid and the ambient air outside.
So amazing.
It's kind of a space age cool ship room. It's at the top. It's right above our tap room, like 3 stories up.
Yeah.
And it's on the corner of the building. And yeah, it goes in and comes out, like I said, 18 Celsius, which I'm guessing it's probably in the 60s. And then from there, it goes down into our a tank, and then we just put it right into barrels. We cross our fingers.
Wow.
And
so it inoculates basically overnight.
Yeah.
Goes down into some sort of stainless tank just to get it, but it almost immediately goes into barrels.
Yeah, same, like that morning it goes into barrel.
Okay. So you don't let it sit in stainless for a period of time. It just, okay. New barrels?
Typically, no, not new. They'll be used. Like, we get barrels from all over the world. We have a bunch of brokers we work with. They're typically 400 to 500 liters, so like larger size puncheons.
Okay.
That'd be, what, like 100 gallon, like 80 gallon to 100 gallon puncheons. We have barrels from like California, Sicily, Northern Italy, France, some from Canada.
Have any of them had beer in them before?
Never.
Or they're just wine?
Typically wine, though you'll see we do some, like the next beer we got up is actually Marsala. So Marsala is a fortified wine from Sicily. We actually did a bunch of beers in Marsala barrels, which you could also do port. We've done cognac, Armagnac. So we actually do a number of our mixed fermentation beers. This next one will be mixed fermentation into like interesting barrels to kind of catch flavor from the barrel.
Got it.
We're typically doing like second, third, fourth fill red wine barrel. So they're fairly neutral. You're getting maybe a little bit of tannin out of them, but generally we're using it just for the physical characteristics of the wood and the permeation of oxygen and stuff.
Sure. So. Okay. Well, and part of the reason for this line of questioning is I think I read that you're the largest barrel program in Canada.
One of them.
I don't know. Okay.
I mean, we have like 500 punch-ins, which is a lot.
Yeah.
We have four rooms over two stories. I mean, one of the biggest, I think, it's one of those things that, there's guys like this brewery in Quebec called Oval on the way in the East Coast. I mean, Bellwoods has a big program, but they use more fooders. So, if you kind of counted like literage or barrelage, we're right up there. Like, we're in the top five, right? Like,
and
we're just getting started. So,
okay.
We're pretty full of barrels, though. Like, I don't think we're not going to be giant, but we want to be like turning beers really reliably.
Sure, that makes sense. Well, especially because once you get started, you've waited this long, you've had to get it going. Now you want to just keep the flow of bottles coming out.
Yeah, and that's the plan.
That's the name of the game. Yeah. So, you clearly then still sell more clean beer until this ramps up,
exactly.
And you think that'll always be the case, or will this overtake?
This will overtake it. I mean, we're also small because we're a small pub brewery. You know, even though we sell kegs to restaurants, we're still a fairly small pub brewery.
Got it.
Like, I mean, our combined right now is probably still under 1,000, probably under 800 barrels, like 1,000 hectoliters, and so we might get to 2,000. You know, with the barrel programming almost being all of that, so we're not going to be a giant. Like, I mean, it's funny because I think in the big picture of things, if you can turn 500 or 100 barrel tanks, like, you're gonna make way more beer than us. But
I see,
you can't do that. Like, we take years
to build up that volume.
But once we got it, we can kind of like churn it, which is cool.
Yeah,
it's all blended too, so everything we do, everything's blended. So we usually do from anywhere from 2 to 8 barrels blended. We actually sit down and group, like, all the blending is done as a team. There's about 5 of us that blend. We actually sometimes bring in guest blenders to kind of like,
nice.
If someone like is a wine person we know, we go, hey, we're blending a Riesling beer.
Yeah.
We want you to kind of, you're a Riesling expert. Literally, we've had one guy. And so so for us, it's a really interesting exercise because we kind of create the beer, then we bottle condition it, cross our fingers at it at the other end is what we think.
Right.
And then Doug, Doug blended with Jean Cantillon, so he's
got a good palate for that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't know how he knows what's going to happen, but he can kind of project like a year later and go, this is what's going to happen. You're like, yep, that's what happened.
That's always blown my mind too. After all of these years of interviews, it's still a question I have for people like that. Like, I just don't get my brain also, I think I have a fairly good palate.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't translate to my brain as well. So I can't, like, being predictive like that is just
I think I feel the same way. Like, I've done this for years now, but I just, it's just not my skill set, I think there's, and then what's cool about, we've actually gotten this, like, another brewer that's doing some blends now, and it's nice because we do it as a group. Like, blending in some breweries is very arcane. Like, one person closes the doors and does it and the out pops the beer, but we try and make it a team effort so we can kind of like reproduce it. We also do a lot of science, like total titratable acidity and stuff on the side of the blend, so we know acid targets, and we're very science oriented brewery. One thing we kind of say is we use traditional techniques, but scientific method and analytics to get better results.
Sure, and it makes sense. Let's try the next beer.
Yeah, yeah.
And so far, it's coming out on the beer because we've all had those sour beers that are too acidic, and you want to love it. You want to love all the other things, but then there's something overpowering. That first beer we've had so far was just, I think, incredibly well balanced.
Thank you. That's very kind.
Yeah,
so. That's the intention. This one is super neat, and I'm always super biased about stuff. This is a Marsala beer. So it's 24 months fermentation, a mixed fermentation beer. So we pitch the microorganisms into the wort, put it into barrels for 24 months. But then the entire time it was spent in Marsala. Marsala is a fortified wine that has kind of nutty notes. It can be either, if you heard of Marsala chicken, that's the cheap stuff. It's like the dry stuff. But there's like also a very sweet Marsala, which is a sipping kind of fortified wine. So this is probably more likely the fortified Marsala. So it's got like, you'll probably find some like maple syrup and some sweet notes, but these are also incredibly dry. There's no sugar in these at all. There's zero. But this has like got some really neat tones in it.
Wow. So already by you saying no sugar added or no sugar left, is there fruit? Is there?
No fruit added. These are all the esters. So these are all fermentation effects.
It has such like a, and it's changing as I speak, such a complex like toffee or chocolate but so
and
many.
And nutty and like, yeah, and like that. Mm-hmm. Like, and then like.
Yeah, now it's turning into nutty.
Yeah.
As it sort of drifts off the palate. Wow. And that's just from the barrel, you're saying.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the barrel and the fermentation notes. The interesting thing I would describe ourselves to some degrees as, I wouldn't, like, it's maybe a bit pretentious, but masters of acid. Like, the right balance of acid can accentuate certain flavors. So we're targeting, like, we're actually, like, again, if you know total titratable acidity, we're almost always under 10.
Okay.
So we're, like, on the lower end, kind of where a cider or, like, a very sharp white wine would be. But what this does is it takes these beers and accentuates elements that you don't normally... You know, if you just had a huge acid bomb, like, you wouldn't catch all the subtlety, right? So we have it just enough that it's kind of like causing all these neat things to pop. And this one in particular, like we got a gold medal at the Concours de Lyon for this beer.
Wow.
And it's just one, and this is our best seller. This just outsells everything in the tap room, probably like 5-1. We're almost out of it.
Wow.
But we have another batch coming. So
okay.
We actually got like a full container of Marsala barrels. So this is our future is we've got these in the future. And it's funny when we made this one, because Doug's like, if people just know us for this beer, you know, hey, that's okay, you know. But at the end of the day, I'm pretty sure our spontaneous will impress people.
Sure.
Too, so,
you know, without all of those other accents being brought out in this too, it would just be a tannin bomb also. And I love tannins, by the way. So I would say this is tannic.
Absolutely.
But because of all those other subtleties that are spiking up and down, it doesn't just taste like wood.
Yeah. And right? So that's a really important, that's a great point, because, you know, all our beers have a fair amount of tannin, both from the barrel and sometimes the prior inhabitant. So, like, if it's a red wine, you'll get some red wine tannin, you'll get some wood tannins.
Okay.
So you'll get tannin. So, yeah, there is that kind of, like, tannic effect, but because it's so fruity and so bright, it doesn't linger, or it doesn't kind of, like, burden your palate.
Yeah. And that's kind of why I'm giving you props. Like, a lesser brewer would have gone, oh, it's fine, just put in that great barrel. And then we would have ended up with a bunch of tannins. Because even I can be like, nope, that one's just, now I'm just chewing on wood.
Yeah.
That's a fabulous beer. I can see why that's your bestseller.
Yeah, thank you. No, it's a cool one.
And I'm sorry, also blended?
Yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, this case is a little different because it's all blended, just all Marsala barrels. So, like, what we'll typically do... is, in the case of this, we'll have probably 8 Marsala barrels, and we may only use 6 and put 2 into a Grand Cru. So this is usually, so, and sometimes we'll take some of the Marsala barrels that maybe aren't as expressive out and throw them in something else.
Okay.
So you get a little bit of this character. So we still do blend, we still select a certain set of barrels, and we still kind of pick what we think is the best for a particular blend, and some we'll sort of put into other stuff. So yeah, all still blended. Like, I think probably 8 barrels in this one too.
That's delicious.
Thank you. Yeah, that one's, that's why I brought it.
you got to bring a showcase. I mean, let's be honest. But
It's interesting because it's just, there's a real sequence to what I'm doing today. So, like, the spontaneous first, because it's very, like, it's more delicate, it's more subtle. This is fairly bold. The last one will be very bold because it's a dry hop, and that you'll see in a little later. But,
okay,
you know, the purpose behind this is to kind of, like, show a range, right?
Sure. So tell me about the relationship of beer and food. Now, I realize that you sort of built the restaurant out of necessity, but you don't seem like the type of person who's going to stop there.
No. I you know, it's interesting for us because, you know, and it does absolutely dictate the beers we make. So when we started, because the restaurant was primarily supported initially by the clean beers.
Okay.
And that's why we don't have, like, anything like double dry hopped IPAs and stuff, because those don't go that well with food.
True,
like,
yeah.
You know, we have quite a few lagers. We have quite a few wheat beers. You know, we did Saisons for a while. I mean, you know, it's kind of crazy, like, in the world today where Saisons are still, like, they don't sell at all. Like, so don't use the term Saison.
You gotta kinda, like, yeah.
it's a mixed ferment or some kind of interesting fermentation. But
right.
So we do a lot of subtler food-friendly beers. What's come along with, we've had these new ones out, like the Monolith beers are great because the acidity is phenomenal with, like, fattier foods, right? Like, it's still, you know, you're still having a challenge with, like, big red meat. Like, I think beer... is tough with big red meat. Some of the richer, we actually have done a couple of red wine barrel that are quite, like, with a slightly different wort that's a little more aggressive, a little more Munich in there, for example.
Sure.
And those can kind of hold up red meat, but, you know, otherwise it's like, you know, these are better with, you know, lighter meats, almost anything, and I think that's the only kind of gap we've got.
Okay. I assume the menu is sort of purpose built as well.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. So all of those foods, you're just working together.
Yeah. Our menu is, it's funny. It's like, so Christine had worked in Belgium for a couple of years at a couple of famous restaurants in Belgium. And so she came back to Canada, was actually working in the butcher shop, then joined us from the butcher shop after she wanted to learn to cut meat better.
Yeah.
And so we were doing a lot of Belgian inspired dishes, which, of course, In our tap room, we have something called a pistolet sandwich in the Monolith tap room. If you've been to Belgium, pistolets are these little round sandwiches. That's a common, like, you know, if you're hanging out at Cantillon, one of the lunches they bring in are pistolets. You know,
sure.
Like, it's kind of funny. So, that's kind of the stuff we serve in our tap room. And, like, you know, cheese is wonderfully cut by these beers. Anything really cheesy or anything really rich, saucy, that's where these beers really shine.
Okay. Do you sell wine?
In the restaurant, we sell wine.
You do?
Mainly natural wines.
Okay. Does the beer in the restaurant outsell wine?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, by a lot. Yeah.
So, well, that's great. Well, because once you become one of the best restaurants in Canada, you'd think that even non-beer drinkers are coming there to try wine.
Well,
so.
I think that's what happens, but what we find a lot, and I think that's one of the really fun things about our market, like our customers, it's not your typical craft beer drinker. Like, we have a very diverse ages, sexes. Like, it's a really... this complete cross section of everyone in the restaurant. So, and you're seeing tables with, like, whether it's a spontaneous beer or just like pints that you would look at and go, they wouldn't normally drink pints.
Right.
But they're drinking pints, and they're drinking, like, we have a sampler that we call the sample doodle, because there's a shop called the Stamp Doodle on the site before, so we call it the sample doodle.
Yeah.
And so, like, you'll see someone like, I can't believe they're drinking a sample doodle. And
yeah.
You know, we have, like, often one barrel aged and one barrel fermented beer on the sample doodle. So we have, like, it's like, where are you going to get, like, a spontaneous beer on a sampler? Right?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
We have that. So
whatever happens from here, I'm calling this a massive success because just when to hear you talk about that diversity of people would just be so cool to see.
Well, I think that's what we need in the business. Like, I think I worry a lot about, I mean, you know, we haven't even started talking about craft beer culture, but, like, I was there kind of in those late teens and sort of trying to help build craft beer culture. And it was a machine, but I kind of feel like, you know, we don't have quite the same mojo we had. And I think we're not doing as good a job as we should be of increasing the customer base, right? We're kind of narrowing it versus increasing it, I think, which is tough. You know, it's really tough to change.
Yeah. And so every conference I go to, you know, obviously that sort of changing customer, change in diversity is like, it's the hot topic. And,
and
so I don't, and this maybe is a good segue to talk about sort of the Canadian craft beer scene.
Yeah.
You know, craft beer has almost plateaued here in terms of growth. Anyway, it's not retracting, but it's not like skyrocketing, right?
Yeah.
In fact, I think I read a recent quote from Bart Watson, the BA economist, who said it's not really fair to say that craft beer has gone south. It's just become more like a normal industry.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
instead of, you know, 15% growth, we're seeing minimal growth, right?
Yeah.
Moderate growth. So anyhow, and part of that is, you know, part of maybe correcting that and getting more growth is finding a more diverse audience, right?
Yeah.
So how would you say the craft beers, you know, both in growth and diversity is in Canada?
It's interesting. Canada, like, is like, so I'm in Edmonton, and Edmonton and Alberta is a little behind the rest of Canada. Rest of Canada being places like Montreal, Vancouver, Toronto.
Sure.
Those places are a little bit ahead of us, but I feel like they're probably still even a little bit behind, U.S., like the U.S. hotspots. We've actually probably plateaued too at around 900 breweries across Canada.
Okay.
My province of Alberta, 4 million people, we have 150 breweries. You've got the lion's share, Quebec, Ontario, Toronto, probably 300 each of those, and just a smattering across the, you know, there's actually great brewing scenes in every province. And so the thing that is cool there, and it's interesting, it's very different than here, but we have a lot of, like, very remote rural towns, like where I'm from, like there's towns like 500 miles away and there's a brewery there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the coolest thing that we've got, I think, is you got almost a brewery in every small town. And these are not, like, close to anything. They're in the middle of nowhere. It's wonderful. That said, like, in the city, we're still kind of growing slowly. We're still expanding, but I don't feel we're making, like, inroads on, like, the audience. The audience is kind of the same. We've still got, like, a pretty good-sized hipster quotient in our craft beer scene, because we're all doing a lot of good stuff with, like, hospitality, too, like food and beer, and that's what I think is working well. But, yeah, the Canadian scene is, and you know, you've seen in my city, for example, like, we're million two people. We have 20 breweries, which is really nice. Like, it's a nice balance.
And that is a nice balance. Yeah,
and then we have this thing called Happy Beer Street in Edmonton where there's, like, 10 of us.
Okay.
And
right.
And so, like, we're my monolith on the north end of that. And then on the east side is Bira and the Blind Enthusiasm Brewery, Market Brewery. And then the south, there's some friends, like, Sea Change, Alley Cat. So we have this, like, 45-minute walkable street where there's 10 breweries. It's becoming an entertainment district. But it's so funny because that's been the places down here for years, but yeah. It's new to us. And so like people are like, what, there's a place you can go and drink beers and walk it up and down the street?
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, I remember doing that 15 years ago in Austin or in Denver.
Yeah.
But we just, it's so, we're kind of catching up, but I think it's looking similar. Like it's not looking that much different.
Okay.
So there's no real, I would say that in a, maybe in a, not a sad way, but there's no real secrets to be discovered there.
Okay.
You know, I think what we're still getting a fairly young, but not the super young. Like I have kids in their 20s. And they occasionally go, I mean, they're very cost conscious. So that's one of the things that's really interesting with the youngsters is they're like, well, how cheap is it? It's like, well, it's not very cheap. Well, we're not going there. We like cheap drinks.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay. Like, well, maybe we can make some like cheaper beers. But like, I think at the end of the day, you know, you got to figure out what triggers those different audiences too.
Got it. That makes me think of another thing that Bart Watson said. I heard him say at the Great American Beer Festival, and I heard him say it as the opposite of what a lot of brewers were saying. In several presentations lately, I've heard the rumor that the younger people are not drinking at all. So it's not just that they're not choosing beer; it's that they're not choosing alcohol. And this, I'm going to go ahead and spoiler alert: this myth keeps getting like propagated, right? And Bart got up and finally said, just so you know, the same amount of people drink in every generation. It's been going on and on and on. It's every generation, every single one. It's the same amount of people who do drink and the same amount of people who don't drink. Of course, what they choose or where you live, and there might be these other things that happen that make it look different. But he said, overall, we have the every generation has the exact same amount of drinkers. And I found that fascinating. So I'm going to stop asking people like, oh, are the young people not drinking in Edmonton?
Yeah, they're doing it elsewhere. A lot of them are pre-drinking, based on what I've seen. Like they pre-drink and then they go have two drinks, you know,
right?
What I mean?
So
like,
it's more, it's going economics.
We're in a slightly tricky economic time right now,
yeah.
Right? And I think the kids, the younger folks, are the ones that are like the least employed. They're having the most challenging time, so they're not going buying $20 bottles of mixed ferment or spontaneous,
right?
So like, I mean, funny enough, they actually are the ones that sometimes do that in the restaurant because when they want to treat themselves, they'll kind of go for the finest things.
There you go, yeah.
Which is cool,
yeah.
But that's like a rarity, you know?
Sure.
Like,
but yeah, don't spend where you don't have to is kind of, seems
yeah,
to be
yeah.
more of a trend than I'm not drinking, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
How about beer styles?
You know, it's funny. Like I know we talked a touch about this in the outset, but yeah, hazies are still super popular. But it's funny. Like I was saying, they seem like a newer thing, like last 3 years or so, whereas they've been down here forever, right?
Sure.
You know, it's kind of it's paralleling here. Lagers have come on big popularity as well. I mean, they were kind of always a little bit popular. Like that's what we were doing right from the beginning. They were always really good sellers. You know, it's pretty broad. Like, it's pretty broad. Like, I mean, I think the big stouts, pastry stouts, and those aren't really a thing up there that much. It's kind of like a rarity. Barley wine's always this funny... Always this funny kind of like there's
stepchild
there's,
as
well,
here.
People like it. There's this sort of secret barley wine community that drinks them, which is just like down here. Yeah, I think it still ends up being, we've kind of moved from hazy a little bit to West Coast IPAs. The spontaneous mixed ferment beers, it's like everywhere. They're still a segment, you know, like I'm heartened there as I am here where every store will have kind of like a whole bunch of cans of hazies and IPAs and they'll have some lagers and then they'll have a little shelf of my bottles. And I'm like, okay, I think at least I'm still there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what we see here as well. But I, like I said initially, like a lot of this sort of stuff that's fun, like English beers, like we do a great, like a really great English bitter. My head brewer Rob that worked at Spinnaker's was an English pub style pub, the oldest pub in Canada.
Nice.
From Victoria. I think the oldest operating one. There's one that may have been before it, but like the oldest running, continuously running. They would have like this amazing English bitter. They had these casks, and you know, we do casks, but just because no one else does them, and they actually do, they do really well. But English beers, like,
nice.
But people, they don't sell that well.
And that's
which is
here, too.
Which is frustrating because they're really good.
Right. My beer buyer gets frustrated here because he likes all of the spectrum, too.
Yeah.
But he can't buy them all. And,
yeah.
And he'll get the, you know, he'll get the two people a week that come in and ask for that amber ale or that English mild. And it sounds all of a sudden like people want them.
Yeah. Like, hey.
So he'll pick one up and then that amber ale will sit on tap for a month, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of the weird. I think it's like, I think that. I mean, the appreciation of beer, there's a little bit of shock and awe to it. So what I mean by that is like these beers that kind of like really surprise you from a palate perspective. Like this, hazies are interestingly aggressive, right? Like, but I mean, but at the same time, they can be very, very drinkable.
Sure.
So it's this funny thing where they're very new. Like that sort of like flavor profile has not really been done in beverage before and very unique. So people, I can see why they're popular, but I'm a little surprised that they've kind of really maintained it for so long. I don't think it's a bad thing. It's, I mean,
well, I think
I drink them too, but
like, I think the skill that's gone into it, I think they're difficult to make. So this
they've gotten much better too.
Yeah. You know? Like this show in the past with my co-host is known for bashing hazies, right? And in some cases, rightly so. What I found is that the more skilled the brewers get at the style, right? So you guys might just be at the start of that too before they become very, very palatable. And
yeah, no, we've got a couple really good hazy makers in Alberta now, and so consequently they're very popular.
Yeah,
because. You know, like I think I find the biggest challenge on hazies to some degree is actually excessively sweet. And it's hidden away under all the layers, but then something's wrong. If you really think, you discover there's a lot of sugar in them, which shouldn't be there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Okay, I'm going to get us to a quick break. We got another beer to try.
Yeah.
And we've got a little more to talk. And then we've got a little get to know Greg segment too.
Exciting.
Something I've been doing for a little while now. So, all right, hang in there. It's the session, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for hanging out with us. We are still listening to the session, and we're still talking to Greg from Blind Enthusiasm out of Edmonton, Canada. We're talking beer, and we're talking locations. We're doing that off the air, and we're talking Canadian beer styles and all of that. And we've got a little bit more to do because we got another beer to try. And I can tell just from the couple we've had so far that you guys are... Well, you've kind of brought it up too. You're traditional, but you're experimental.
Yes.
You're experimental, but you're high tech, right? So, like, you know, I love that it's spontaneous, but a super high tech, like, cool ship room.
Yeah.
So you guys are kind of really blending all of, your passions, really.
Yeah, no, and I think my brewers are also just, you know, there's always an opportunity to improve, you know? And I think that, like, we're not, but just by virtue of my background, having been in video games and stuff, I'm not afraid of technology. So we're kind of, as a company, embrace it and use it in some degree in the brewing process. And that actually really, you know, it's all about, like, better product. Like, one of the things we do, for example, is we really keep a surprisingly clean, like, brewery in the spontaneous and mixed ferment. So people are like, well, why do you do that? It's like, well, we're throwing in a bunch of random organisms. We don't need even more organisms being tracked in. You know, we actually put booties on when they come in our brewery, and they're always like, really? He goes, yeah, this is just what we do.
That's the way to do it.
Because we don't want strange things adding to our strange things.
Yeah.
We don't need more.
My favorite sour breweries, with the exception of Cantillon, does the same thing.
Yeah.
But Cantillon can do whatever the fuck they want. They've been doing it for, 200 years? So.
A long time.
Yeah. Anything that's there belongs there.
So I'll pour this next one out.
Yeah.
This next one is called Astra Primersa. Astra Primersa is part of our dry hop series. We do a number of dry hop beers, probably about 3 or 4 a year. This one's a mixed fermentation blend. We've got next year coming some spontaneous dry hops. So this dry hop is EKG and Amarillo.
Okay.
So we tend to do a traditional kind of noble style with a modern style. And the intention for these beers is just to kind of like use the acid to express the hop in a unique way. And this one I think is among the most punchy and aggressive, very, very fruit forward. Still very clean. You know, this is purposeful again for what I'm showing you. This is like the most extreme of the hoppy beers that we do. I feel like an IPA drinker would probably drink this and like it. Again, almost no sugar, basically none. A lot of fruit character, fruit from the hops, but also, you know, you get like the grapefruit rind and a lot of and some orange marmalade from the EKG, but just really bold, expressive.
And again, same wort as all the other beer?
Same wort.
You guys just use one wort for
90%. We actually have a darker wort on occasion for we put some Munich malt in that, and then just to do a little bit darker. But 90, like all the ones we've been trying today have been the lighter, the standard
got
wort.
Yeah. So standard wort, spontaneous.
This is mixed. Firm. So, yeah.
Okay, mix. Yep. And then the other main difference would be as dry hopping.
Then. Yeah, this one's dry hopped.
Okay.
I think
tannins in this one too, but I almost think some of them are hop tannins.
They could be.
Yeah.
This one's like I said, this is almost like this is why I go like, you know, IPA drinkers, I think will probably like this because there's familiar flavors, but they're sort of different. Our hopping rates I never know them off the top of my head because I just kind of always forget, like, is it 3 or 30 grams per liter? It's actually, as the Doug would say, they're small. They're lower hopping rates than typical, but the acid really accentuates it.
Okay.
All I know is we use about 10 kilograms for about 40 hectoliters of beer, so 4,000 liters, whatever that works out to.
Got it. And they're fresh new hops, right, as well.
Exactly, because I didn't mention, we follow the true lambic tradition and we use aged hops. We've been aging hops for years. We actually even bought hops like 10 years ago.
Okay.
Right when we started buying hops, whole leaf, whole leaf hops, and we actually have we've developed a method of aging them in such a way they don't get cheesy at all. They get very tea-like. It's really quite delightful. And typically they're almost always low alpha. They're usually under 6%, under 5% even. A lot of them initially were noble, but we actually started using some like American, like Willamette and Liberty, and they've actually turned out really good. We've been really happy with them.
Okay.
I mean, they're cultivars of those nobles as well, but just like a lot of low alpha, and the hops are in a sense used to dial the acidity. So more hops means less acidity, right? So we've kind of refined our output. That's really what we've done. We figured all the triggers and all the levers to pull to kind of get certain outcomes we want from the actual barrels. It's still random to some degree. You'll have a batch, it's amazing. You'll have the same batch of beer in the same sort of set of barrels, and they'll all taste slightly different, and one will taste radically different. You're like, why? We don't know. Something was in there that maybe wasn't unexpected or whatever. So.
Sure. So I remember the first Belgian-style beers, and they were Belgians, by the way, so I should say Belgian beers.
Yeah, yeah.
That were putting American hops in them.
Ah.
Do you remember that? Like, you know, if we're talking 15 years ago.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. I think Duvel did a couple.
They were trying it out.
Yeah.
Wasn't a fan. Later on, they got better at it too.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is a unique, it's a great mixture. And to me, I guess the main difference is because it does still have a lot of the stone fruit coming out of it. It does still have a... But there's just a little bitterness. There's just a little bit of addition. And I'm sure if I had those hops next to me, I could smell what you put into. I'd also pick that up, right? But spontaneous beers are still pretty powerful on their own, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of esters and a lot of flavors on them, yeah.
So when you get into this, I would be curious to try one with one of yours with one set of dry hop and then a different variety, right? So that I could really pick it out, especially since you're doing the same wort.
Yeah, no, and we do a number of, we probably do 4 different dry hop beers a year. And like I said, we were kind of mixing and matching different hops, usually a noble and a modern, and just to get kind of a unique character, right? So
sure.
This one's neat. I mean, this one's just, I kind of find this one, like, for folks that don't really know these beers, but they like hoppier beers, I'm like, try this, and they're always like, wow, that's really, really something, you know? And
a little bit of the best of both worlds.
Kind
of,
yeah.
So this one's called Astra
Primersa.
Primersa, okay, got it.
We have complicated names.
So there's only complicated the more you drink.
Yeah, and so there are a lot of S's, so it's hard to pronounce if you're slurring after drinking too much beer.
Yeah.
So there's always a little method to these. Like Astra Primersa is, we use a Latin name if there's a mixture of countries. So there's English and American. So we did a beer called Frucht Bomba, which means fruit bomb. It's a Mandarin in Bavaria, whole melon beer, and Frucht Bomba means fruit bomb in German.
Nice,
and it's German hop. So we have little... Probably no one will ever really care about the, like, we put all this care into all these, like, funny things.
Yeah.
Petit Peu is the one I mentioned with the French hops earlier.
Nice.
And they're 2 French hops. But it's really funny because we do all this stuff, and I'm not sure if anyone cares. But we like it.
The beer nerds care, and the people on my show care.
Yeah. They can search out the secret of all our dry hop names.
There you go.
Now that we've done this, so.
Well, if you want to go learn more about the beers and the different ones they have, like I said earlier on the show, you can go to blindenthusiasm.ca. They've got a great list of beers that are current, and you have a little past beers tab, which is super cool.
Yeah, well, because because these are all cellarable, like, you know, there's no beer that, like, you know, is ever gone. I mean, our clean beers, they are ales and lagers. I mean, you shouldn't keep those too long. Don't keep a hoppy beer for more than, like, 3-4 months, you know, like, you just drink them fresh. Our barrel-aged beers, we do some really super cool barrel-aged beers. We do, like dark lagers with bourbon barrels. Rob had worked at a brewery called, like I said, called Yukon Brewing up in the Whitehorse, way up north. And they have a really, really great distillery called Two Brewers. They're actually one of the top distilleries in Canada. And because he worked on them, we can get their barrels. They give us their barrels. And he actually probably made the original wash on these that turned into whiskey, you know, 5 years ago, and now they've used them a couple times. So we've been doing Yukon Meadows using their, you know, again, dark lager with honey. Our brew house doesn't allow us to do super high gravity beers, so we often will have to supplement with some kind of adjunct to get the ABV up. So we're doing like 10% dark lager beers. But the cool thing about them is, even though they're like big, they're really drinkable. So these are like, we have quite a range. Coming down to the States will be these. And if there are you know, importers in the audience, please reach me.
There we go.
Yeah, I'm actually talking to folks right now. But I mean, like, I think we want to get down here. We think there's a really neat opportunity for these beers. There's a great bunch of beers down here already, but I think we can kind of slot in the shelf in a positive way.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's part of how we found you and reached out to you too, because I think your beers would fit in just great here. And there's not, there's less and less breweries spending this amount of time on true spontaneous fermentation. So,
yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because the biggest thing we've kind of learned in that regard is you can't dabble in this. Like, this is like, you know, the days of like, hey, I got four barrels in the corner and something's going to come out and it'll be good. They don't exist anymore. Like, right. You know, like half the time it's not good. Half the time it's okay, but you can't reproduce it. Like, end of the day, you know, we make this our mission. You know, this is something we do and we focus on it, and we don't make anything else of the monolith. That's it. This is all we do.
Love it. All right, you're going all in. So
yeah.
Well, plus you got the clean beer to back it up.
Yeah.
Well, you want to play Get to Know Greg?
Sure. I don't have a choice. I'm tied to this chair.
Yeah. We got this is how I like to end the shows now, because we're running out of time here.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with one. Yeah, this one's fun.
Sure.
If I was going to force you to get a tattoo tonight, here in Concord, what would it be?
Probably the hop grenade, I think.
Yeah!
It's funny you say that. Like, I've got a fresh tattoo on my inner arm here.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And I got that. My daughter really, really wanted a tattoo. And so I'm like, okay, if you get one, I'll get one.
Okay,
My wife, not super happy about it, but... Yeah, I've got a couple. I worked on a Star Wars game, so I've got a Star Wars tattoo. And
that's amazing.
My wife has to give approval, though. So
sure.
I'll have to call her.
Send her the hop grenade.
Show them your logo, and then be like, I'm not sure.
Hey, that's still the best answer I've ever gotten.
She picks location, right?
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Don't worry, I won't make you do this, but that's a great, great answer.
I think it's a cool logo.
You like music?
I do like music.
All right, here's one. In your opinion... And again, right now,
okay.
Who's the best band in the world, either past or present? I know. You could change your mind tomorrow, so just know that.
I have to say The National.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason I say The National is it's dad. My daughter calls it dad music, and I'm a dad, so I like dad
But
music.
It's like sad dad
it's
music.
Sad dad music. They're so diverse. I mean, they do a lot of really cool stuff.
So great.
So that's my kind of like... I kind of listen to them. You know, and it's funny. I always come back to them. That's the funny thing is I'll kind of like do something else for a year, then come back to The National.
I love it. You're doing great so far. What's the weirdest food that you like?
That's an interesting one. I'm largely vegetarian. I eat fish.
Isn't that called something too?
Pescatarian.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I really, really, really like raw tofu, just to eat raw tofu. It's got no flavor.
Wow.
It tastes weird.
That's weird.
I really like raw tofu. I could just eat raw tofu.
You just
uncooked,
open the package and just eat it. Amazing.
And it's just like a weird, like, I feel that's pretty weird.
I think it needs seasoning,
but I still like it.
Yeah, by most people, the first time I ever had tofu I liked was some chef just seasoned it perfectly.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's terrible.
You're like, fine. is there a beer or brewery that inspired you the most to come do this? And maybe you've already said this.
I would say Jester King.
Yeah.
It was such an amazing, you know, it's kind of like the stars align, the opportunity exists. You know, I don't even know the year, probably 2009. If I find out what year they started, that was the year that, you know, I was going there. And it was crazy because my friend would ride his horses there. So they're in Dripping Springs outside Austin. Yeah. And I'd stay at my friend's house and I'd drive there. I wouldn't drive. I'd take a cab or Uber there. and him and his wife would ride their horses. They had a post you could see
horses. That's the coolest thing.
And we just have beers and hang out, and I got to know the folks there. And then, you know, the funniest thing about after when I did the beer diaries in Austin, a bunch of the guys, when we stopped doing it, went to work at Jester King. Like Peppy the farmer was my PR guy on the beer diaries.
And, wow.
And so like, so it's really funny because like I had this funny connection with them. But I mean, I think I have tremendous respect for what those guys do. Like I really, really do.
Heck yeah.
They've evolved. I mean, they've had to evolve, and that's part of the reality. But I just think, I just love that, like, they really, you know, brew with their passions first, and that's kind of what they do.
Sure. And you've sort of followed in that footstep.
Tried.
Yeah.
You know, tried.
Yeah. Okay. You seem to have many talents. But what's a talent that you don't have that you've always wished you could possess if you could?
Oh, that's a really interesting one.
And I'll give you one from me while you think about it. So you don't have to listen to me. But I've always wished that I could sing like Robert Plant, like really belt it out, right? Like Chris Robinson, like just belt it out.
I can sing okay, but not like that. I think, that's a really interesting one. That's a tough question.
Yeah.
What I wish I could do.
Yeah.
I wish I could finish my tasks.
that's a skill,
like,
man.
Like I do finish them, but I'm just like, I just have so many things, so many plates.
Right.
Always rolling. I don't know.
That's good enough.
I think I wish I could finish more things and close more conversations or items.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm obsessed with my to-do list and throw it away. Then do we make another one and throw it away? And I'm like, it's just awful.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah. I can relate to that. All right. If your food is bad at a restaurant, do you say something?
You know, I generally haven't, but I think, you know, it's interesting you say that. I'll usually tell someone else. I was at this one place with my friend, and this place she always went and said, you should tell them this is like really, really, really greasy. Like,
yeah,
it's just not eatable.
Right.
Because why don't you tell them? They don't know me. Like, yeah. They'll trust you. And
yeah.
So, yeah, I think so. And I mean, I think you can be constructive about it. Like, as being involved in owning a restaurant, if you can say specifically what the issue is, like when they really, it's a really interesting one. Like over salting, is a really common problem. But then under salting is, in the chef's mind, worse.
Right.
So that's why you will typically. So it's kind of like if it's under seasoned, that's worse than over seasoned. And it's funny because, like, you know, if it's under seasoned, then you can season it. But they want it to come out perfect. Like, they're not expecting to have it come back and reseason it, right?
So right.
I think I would be more likely in a constructive way to sort of and explain clearly what the issue is.
Mm-hmm.
And I have done that before, but I've often used proxies.
Yeah. I'm similar. I always like this question because a lot of times you'll get, especially from restaurateurs, you have to, isn't it? Don't you want to know? And I'm like, yeah, well, I do.
Yeah.
But not everybody does. And I have said things at times nicely, constructively. No one wanted to hear it.
Yeah, no, that's actually a serious thing. Is, I mean, we've done this, and like someone I knew is like, yeah, you want another one? Like, what? You're not comping it? Like, you're not like, with the same bad thing? Like,
I was at a place the other day. This is kind of the same, but not. I got halfway through my beer, and a gnat or two landed in it.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, hey, you know, could I just have another one? And kind of looked at me, and I was like, I mean, there's like bugs in it now. And we were sitting inside, you know.
And I finally,
I'll pay for it, I guess. And they're like, yeah, okay. And they put it on my bill.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, that's weird.
I think, you know, I think it's kind of a sign of the times because, like, at the end of the day,
everything's expensive.
It is. And if you, you know, creating a positive customer experience is always valuable. And having that longer term customer, you treat someone well in that circumstance, they'll kind of go, you know, I trust that place. I like that place. And you don't, I mean, you kind of cut them off as a customer and maybe they feel that that's okay. But
sure.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a weird one.
It is a weird one. It's always weird. All right. Good or bad? What's a habit that you've picked up from your parents?
Oh, that's an interesting one. What habits have I picked up from my parents?
I think I picked up procrastination from mine.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's a really interesting one. I think, like, if anything, probably from my mom staying up too late. That's, and I mean, I kind of kick that every once in a while, then I fall back into it. My mom is, like, an incredible night owl, and so, like, I'm both, but then I'll always fall back into night owl. Yeah. Especially when I'm playing video game. If there's a video game I love, I'm like, oh, it's the sun's coming up. I better go to bed.
Better go to bed, yeah.
Better go to bed. It's time for bed.
I always thought I'd grow out of being a night owl. It's not happened yet, and I'm not young anymore.
But I can flip. I'll flip to early and go early for months, and then suddenly something will flip me, and I'm like, I'm doomed, and I'm like, night owl.
I think that's a good skill, actually.
I can flip. It's bad to be night, though.
What are you super into that nobody really knows about?
Some people know. I'm really, really, really into fly fishing and tying flies. It's a passion of mine. I mean, people kind of know about it because I do talk about it a lot. But in the general world, people don't know that. And I mean, I travel and fly fish a lot. So that's probably, I tie.
You make your own.
You make tons and tons. I haven't bought a fly in like a decade.
Oh, that's awesome. So, did someone teach you that?
Internet did. YouTube.
Yeah,
something
YouTube.
Called YouTube. Davey McPhail on the YouTubes.
Nice.
He's this lovely Scottish guy. He goes, oh, and here you go. You just roll this around here. And pull this over there. Like he's got this lovely voice. And there's another guy named Tightlines Video. There's a couple like really, really... So you can just learn anything. And then and it's like I kind of think we're in this golden age of... You want to learn anything? It's on YouTube. Like anything.
Absolutely.
Anything.
Like absolutely.
You fix your car?
I was just going to say, I fix all of mine and my girlfriend's cars. And I had like a moderate amount of skills at doing that.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh, what's wrong with it? I'll figure that out. Where's YouTube?
Yeah, I was like playing around with bike like derailleurs and stuff. And I'm like, oh, you just turn this, do this and do this. I'm like, oh, I fixed my derailleur. I'm like, wow.
It's pretty.
Like, why am I paying someone for that? I mean, they're better at it and they're way faster and more reliable. But
yeah,
I mean, if in a pinch I can do it, I'm just like, that's amazing, actually.
All right. Here's kind of a weird one. Thinking about careers and jobs and people you know and people you don't know. Is it difficult to do what you do for a living, do you think? Does that ever cross your mind?
I think it's difficult because it's entirely random. And what I mean by that is like I create my own job in real time based on what's needed. So I don't have and I think I don't have any kind of job description. And I've never really had one. So I've like, you know, when I ran a video game company, we'd be like, oh, this week I'm the head of operations and next week I'm doing sound effects. And like, so I've always been in this like mode of like continually changing, but also being in control of it, which is wonderful. But I don't think it's hard, but I think it's hard to learn. The biggest thing I do, I think, like I said earlier, was like kind of coaching all the people. So you have to have like I'm in the center of all the relationships. And so I can kind of like my job is like referee and coach. And like if someone's fighting, you bring them together. Someone's not talking, you bring them together. Like it's actually really easy, but it's very hard to execute because you need to have
I would call that very difficult, and I'm good at it too.
Yeah.
And I would call that very difficult.
Oh, no, and it's never ending. Like when my business partner and I ran BioWare, it was really funny because we had like 900 employees at one point, and then we had like some in Ireland, like another five. Like we had over almost 1,500 people across the world.
Wow.
And we always joked... Like, everything's on fire. Like, literally, everything's on fire. But there are certain fires that are burning more. So we just got to, like, be focusing on the really bad fires. And then as soon as that one's out, you look at the next fire.
Yeah.
And, like, and your life is entirely... Which is actually...
Yeah, you're a firefighter.
Yeah. And it's not good because we're still doing strategy, but, like, you know, you become very reactive, which is not a great way to work. But, like, I think when you're juggling so many plates or spinning so many plates, it's just, like, there's no... And that's why I quit. Like, I quit after 20 years because I was just, like, burnt out because I'm just, like... I had a studio in Austin of 600 people and then 900 in Ireland that making this giant Star Wars game. I was we're between Electronic Arts and LucasArts, Lucasfilm, and I'm kind of like doing all this stuff. And I was like, it's really funny. I was visiting a friend yesterday and he says, yeah, you look so much better than back when you were doing the Star Wars game. I'm like, yeah, that was a disaster.
Right. Those lessons you've taken with you, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Then now the juggling of fires is not only probably more palatable, but there's less of them. And,
well, and there's less brinksmanship. I mean, I'm so sad for the video game business. Like, I just heard there's a big layoffs at one company, like 800 people got laid off. Like, it's super tough. And it's like, you know, like it's a really tough industry. And when you're the one making those decisions, it's devastating. And so I kind of like, you know, I like my little brewery and like what we do. And we have a great team and everyone gets along generally.
Sure.
You have to always kind of like do some fixing. But like it's fun. The other big thing for me was like when I used to work in video games, it'd be like for a worldwide audience. Now I do stuff for my neighborhood. And that's so different to like be meeting the people that drink the beer and chit-chatting what we can do better. Like that's just so rewarding.
Absolutely. Well, I can't think of a better thing to end on than
awesome.
That.
Well, thank you.
It's been great to have you. Thank you for sharing all that info. I really appreciate it. Of course, like I said, folks, you can go to blindenthusiasm.ca. Check out the website. It's a great website, by the way. Are you a website builder, too?
I didn't build this one, but okay. I built the association one. Yeah, we're kind of going to upgrade it. We got, like, it's always like, it's never ending. There's so
of
many
course.
Things to do. But I think the biggest thing is, like I want to really showcase all our products and I mean, you know, it's like it could be better. That's
yeah.
what I'm saying.
Well, it makes me think because of all the work and it's never ending for you. I lied. I have one last question.
Oh, okay, sure.
Well, so you were ready to retire after your 20 years in the last gig. I mean, you're not really retired, though.
Oh, it's awful.
Do you feel like you'll be ready to retire again?
I've kind of put 10 years as a timeline for me right now, for okay. 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
I label most of the beers with, we have a team of people, we hand bottle, so we're hand bottling 100,000 bottles this year.
Wow.
Getting a label, believe me, we're getting a bottle machine is ordered and arriving.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know when. soon, hopefully, but like I'm very involved in like the day to day as well as the like stuff like this. And so I kind of want to move out of the day to day and just kind of, you know, I want to like have other people run it and I can show up and drink beer in 10 years.
Yeah, there you go.
Which would be ideal.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
But I mean, it's going to be a lot of work, but a lot of fun to get there.
Okay.
Cool.
No, that's a good answer. Yeah.
Thank you.
I also want to retire in 10 years, by the way.
Yeah. You got to find a good minion.
I know, exactly. Yeah, I got to figure that out.
It's all about the minion.
Well, thank you again for being here. I really appreciate it. And for coming down in person. You know, I've told you and I tell other brewers, I'm just so over Zoom, so I'm very thankful whenever brewers will come down and do it.
Super fun to come down. I've been really enjoyed coming to town and like, you know, seeing the place, trying some breweries, local breweries and stuff. You guys made recommendations. I really appreciate them. It was awesome.
Great. Well, when distribution works out, I'll be expecting to carry your beer. So
that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Hey, don't forget to check out all of our sponsors. Go to beersmith.com right now. Get your free web edition for 30 days. You're going to fall in love with the Beersmith brewing software. You know that. Go check it out. Brad's a good guy. He's been a supporter for so long. Go get your Beersmith brewing software. Go to 21st Amendment. Check out all their new stuff. Go to Williams Brewing. And of course, last but never least, morebeer.com, the wonderful people over there. I've got a show coming up next with our old friend Dave Marlave, or Molly Avuvu, as we used to call him. We're going to be, he's got a whole new gig happening and a crazy story to tell us, of course. He always has crazy stories, but this might be the craziest one we've ever seen. So stay tuned for that on our next show. Congratulations again to all the GABF winners, but especially my friends at Liquid Gravity. All right, folks, we'll see you next time. Take care of yourselves and your beer.
The Session is a production of the Brewing Network and brought to you by More Beer. Check them out at morebeer.com. Find more content and live video of this show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/brewingnetwork. For sponsorship opportunities and information, please reach out to advertising@thebrewingnetwork.com. To reach our hosts, contact feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com.